Welcome to Trendsetters, the latest season of the podcast Long Story Short. I'm Peter van Doywert, and this series is all about demystifying the world of quantitative trend following strategies, how they work, why they work, and where they might fit in your portfolio.
Hi, Russell. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Peter.
So it's been a pretty wild year in markets in 2022. And as CIO of AHL, you've had really a great vantage point to see a lot of it. You know, bonds and equities have done terribly. You know, energy commodities have soared. Other things like metals and Bitcoin have plunged. Somehow trend strategies have navigated it all really, really well. They've posted strong returns and investors are definitely paying attention. But before we dig into the returns, I thought maybe we could start a bit more simply about how and why it works. And so maybe to start off, what exactly is a trend following strategy?
Sure. So a trend following strategy is, at its very heart, very basics, one where we try to identify if a price is moving upwards or it's moving downwards. If it's moving upwards, we'll take a long position. And if it's moving downwards, we'll take a short position. And basically, that's the nuts and bolts of a trend following strategy. Obviously, all of the intricacy is in which markets, you know, which ones do you trade? How big should your position be? How do you control your risk, etc.? But right at its heart, it's identifying if a market is moving upwards and if it is going long and vice versa.
So as you describe it, it all sounds pretty simple. So could an investor just fire up an Excel spreadsheet and do it by themselves?
It is. I mean, at the heart, the concept of trend following is very straightforward, right? I explained it before. I'd make some identifier for prices going up and then take a long position and vice versa. So at its heart, it's very straightforward. The nuance, obviously, and the difference between running something basic and it not quite working and you getting frustrated and the returns not being as you would hope is how you construct your signal and manage your risk. So all of the details that go into building a portfolio, and then crucially how you execute. So you're trading a lot in a trend following strategy typically. And you need to manage that cost of execution. So, could you do it in a spreadsheet? Yes, you possibly could. Would I suggest you have a large chance of that working? I think it's a bit more tricky.
I guess it reminds me, I was a PM at a macro fund a long time ago, and PMs at macro funds tend to focus a little bit like on FX or bonds or commodities, or something specific, but it's pretty rare a guy punts around in nat gas and South African currency. But yet you guys do a lot of all of this. So, how do you go about managing it? How do you control it all? Like, how does this work?
The tricks of trend following, or one of the things that it's important to get right, is when you put all of these signals together and you run it across lots of different markets, you end up building risk exposures. So you'll end up being long equity risk or long the dollar or short bonds or whatever big macro exposure you tend to take. And you need to be a little bit careful that exposure is reasonable. It's within some sensible limits. Because, of course, the flip side to trend following is the reversal bit, which happens from time to time. And our objective here is to make as much profits as we can, subject to controlling the tail. And that is always the way that you need to think about constructing portfolios.
I guess I might take a step back then. So I guess what kind of models go into trend funds? At a high level, we don't want to be super complex, but just kind of a general sense.
Most trend signals will use price data. So they'll use historical prices, and they might use things like moving averages. And, the classic trend following signal is the difference between moving average crossovers and the difference between those different moving averages gives you some signal, which you then turn into a position using a response function. So that's a classic trend following signal. There are others that look at price levels. They look at, you know, breakout type systems that react much more quickly to particular levels. And then there are others that use different information. So not necessarily the price from that particular market, but perhaps the price from other markets, and occasionally other bits of information as well. So there's quite a large genre of signals that people use. Some things originally, to your point, someone would have squiggled it out on a piece of paper and they would have kind of tried to establish, does this pattern make sense? And then it's a case of testing it over lots of data and then, you know, establishing confidence in a signal.
So we were both at a conference in New York that Mann hosted a little while back. And I remember because you cleverly ducked out before the Q&A on my presentation, which was on risk mitigating strategies. And trend obviously fits in as a potential risk mitigating strategy and a diversifier. But anyway, at the end of that talk, an investor asked me, you know, why does trend still work? You know, after all, AHL has been doing this for at least 30 years. It's in academic literature. So, you know, what is it about trend that's still effective?
One of the examples I kind of like to point to, because it's an example of why I think the system's fairly enduring, was this discovery several years ago about this I guess stone tablet from 5,000 years ago, and it recorded the price of corn.
Was it uptrending in
Sumeria, and you could take these corn prices, and they were written over years and years and years. And if you looked at the time series of those corn prices in ancient Sumeria, they exhibited really strong trends. And another example that I have, because it resonates with my kids, is that they find something that they're into, right? So they trade these cards, and there'll be a particular card that becomes popular, and all of a sudden, you know, the value of that card goes up. And really, both of those things are indicative of the fact that prices, by their very nature, are driven by behavior, and behavior in its nature is very, very trend following. So it will take a lot to stop trend following working because of those very natural reasons for trends to happen. And the other kind of important point to all of this is trend following is really not a very good strategy, right? So if you try running trend following on a single market, you'll find that most of the time it looks awful. So you're buying high, selling low, and that costs you money. And you have to be very patient until the price then starts really moving, and then you make nice outsized returns. But you need to be able to have some patience, and you need to be able to build big, robust portfolios. And if you do all of that, then you can get the system to on average work. So I think that's probably the reason why, you know, it's been around for a long time, and it's likely to be around for quite some time to come.
Yeah, I guess part of that too is the multi-asset bit matters, right? If we're just confining yourself to one or two assets, you run the risk of those assets doing nothing for a while, you know, akin to commodities for 10 years.
Yeah, and that's certainly one of the challenges of trend following. You know, I've seen it in my career. There can be certain markets that are stuck in a range for a long time, you know, and it's easy to convince yourself after some time that there are reasons why this thing will never move too much again, and you're foolish to be trend following it, and you give up, and then, you know, at that point that you give up, then it starts to trend in magnificent fashion. So it is a strategy that requires some patience, and in particular, it requires diversification.
Yeah, I guess 2022 is a great example of all this, right? Because inflation is new, right? And so I guess I'm curious what your thoughts are about market regimes and where trend might generate some returns in changing regimes. And, you know, what is the environment for trend, I guess?
Yeah, so regime change in markets is one of those things that can be a challenge to many strategies, right? And it can definitely be a challenge to investors. Inflation at its heart is a measure of price change. And price change can be a challenge for investors, and it can be a challenge for people, clearly, and it can be a challenge for the economy. But if you think about the nature of trend, well, price change is exactly what trend needs. It needs prices to move. And what you tend to find is if you get price change happening in one part of the market ecosystem, it affects other parts. And you know, prices tend to, if you get the dollar moving, for example, it can affect commodity prices. If commodity prices move, it can affect equity prices and bond prices and so on. So inflation as a phenomenon, I think, is probably on average supportive for trend, and it's quite a challenge for other things.
Yeah, I think it's, I know a lot of investors talk to us and Man Solutions about how to, you know, how should I position in commodities? I know they're supposed to work in inflation, but if I look at this year, energy's up a ton and metals are down a ton. And so how does trend navigate that right? Like, you know, it sounds like you're making money off of inflation, but if you're long metals, you're not, right? You're losing money. So how does that all work out this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's never, as you know, the markets are never straightforward, and it's never the case that everything goes in one direction for long enough that it's easy to make money, and then it all kind of calms down and goes in the opposite direction. Things move in different ways based on different bits of information. The key for me actually is to abstract a little bit away from that and just think about uncertainty and volatility. And we, as trend followers, tend to like uncertainty. Again, it's a measure of price movement, and trend following is a system that likes prices to move. So, I don't think you need to get too cute or too into the details of about if a metal is going up or oil is going down or all of the intricacies, and rather just look at the whole, the bigger picture, and the trends that exist overall.
So thinking about trend strategies, I guess I'd also be curious how they compare to other systematic or discretionary macro strategies, you know, specifically discretionary macro, where they may use carry type strategies or, you know, other kind of trend following signals themselves.
Look, I mean, there are many different types of strategy and signal that people can use. Some of them carry based strategies or short vol strategies, that they tend to like prices to not move that much. Actually, they like spot prices at the very least to stay fairly static, and then they'll pick up some carry based on the shape of the forward curve. And those types of strategies tend to do quite badly when you get lots of volatility and you get big turning points. Discretionary macro can be clearly a big mix of things, and there's more fundamental information that goes on. There might be a mixture of some trend-like behavior in those strategies, but the difference with systematic macro is it just focuses on the, you know, or systematic trend, just focuses on the trend following part.
And so does that mean you guys need vol? Like if there's no vol in the market, lights out?
Yeah, I mean, if there was no vol, there'd be no price movement at all, and that would be bad news for trend followers. Luckily, there's never no vol. Lights out across the market.
Right? But if I go back to 2017 or other years, you know, obviously this has been a big year. Other years, you're still generating return in trend strategies, so it didn't seem all that volatile. I mean, I've been a vol PM, and I remember not making lots of money during some of those years, especially long vol. So, you know, where did it come from?
Where did the recent...
The returns from like 2014, 15, 16, the more... Again, they're lower, but if you're looking for vol, there wasn't any vol. So, you know, what's the difference between now and then, I guess?
I don't know, there wasn't any vol. There was still some. So prices obviously still needed to move to a degree. Those years were, in general, bit more tricky for trend following, at least in the G10 most liquid markets. 14 was okay, but 15, 16 were probably a little bit more tricky for basic trend. Our approach, or the reason why we could do a little bit better in those years, was diversity across two axes. One is the markets that we trade, and the second is the signals that we employ. So I think if you've got a year like this year, the sweet spot has been fairly basic trend following on the core markets. But if you want something that is a bit more reliable, a bit more all weather, a bit more likely to work in those years where volatility is not quite so high, for example, you need a more diversified approach.
Right. And I guess, does the Fed have an impact? And did the Fed take away things from you to do in those years versus now, who's given you opportunity?
Yeah, I think so. I think not just the fact that the Fed acted as a backstop to markets, but the fact that people believed that the Fed would act as a backstop to markets, right? All of that suppressed tails in markets, and trend following likes things to be able to move. So if the actions of a central bank, or even the perceived actions of what they're going to be, are likely to be counter trend, i.e. if things start to get more difficult in markets, then you've got this central bank to step in to provide a cushion. All of that, as you said, dampens volatility, it dampens price moves, and it makes it more difficult for markets to break out of a range and to trend. So it was certainly the case that made the environment a bit more tricky for the last 10 years. Do I think that's changed in the last couple of years? Yeah, I do. I mean, I've been saying it for a few years, and you know, it's always difficult to make prognoses that last you know, more than a couple of days, yet, let alone years. But it's certainly the case now, as we well know. The central banks have talked about it. There's no more forward guidance. The central banks are dictated by the data, and that allows for things to move. So they're not going to be there at the moment. If you've got a high inflation, then their arms are tied, and they need to react to data.
So digging into this year's returns, not so much specific returns, but a bit of positioning, I find it pretty intriguing, because obviously trend strategies have made money. So that means they're probably not long bonds and equities, you know, which most people are, right? Most people have a huge core portfolio of bonds and equities. They may have some things around the edges. And so I'm curious to what extent trend has been a diversifier and to what extent you think it's been corrective of those positions. And that's two different thoughts, right? You know, you're getting rid of something I have, or you're adding something I don't.
Yeah, I think there are times like this year, you know, like the first half of this year, where having genuine diversifiers for portfolios is very important. You know, clearly, in a year in which most assets, not commodities, but financial assets, have really struggled, and the trend has been negative, and you've taken negative positions, you then become very, very complementary to a long-only portfolio. There are times when the trends will be positive, and it will feel like you're less complementary. But in order to make an overall balanced system that can provide, you know, complementary behavior in the tails, but also positive performance, you need the whole package. And I think it's you know, this is what investors really, that's what people want. They want diversifiers, but they don't want diversifiers that are a massive drag in expectation. It's very, very difficult to accommodate those things.
Yeah, and I think part of the diversification part that I always find interesting is I really don't know where, you know, South African currency should be. And yet a trend following strategy gives me exposure to that. But I really want to focus on the first half of the year, really about bonds and equities. And I guess what did trend do in bonds specifically, you know, for the first 6 months of the year, and how was that of help?
Well, look, I think you know, a lot of people who are active in the markets right now have hardly seen a bear market in bonds. You know, they've been used to bonds being not only a diversifier and a protector of portfolios, but also having positive performance. So this first half of this year has been a real shock to, you know, to bond investors in general. And I think the Sharpe ratio of bonds in the first half was something like -5, you know, having been a kind of solid +1.5 for years and years, you know, something -5. So trend strategies would have noticed that. They would have seen the direction of travel of bonds. They would have got into short positions. And those short positions are not just a generic will short bonds and, you know, every single bond across the curve. In some places, bonds have been a bit more durable. And other places, they've been a lot more challenging. So you'll have this kind of nuanced portfolio. But the idea being that what you're buying with trend is not a short bond portfolio. It happens to have been short bonds in on average the first half of this year because they've been going down. But it's the dynamic that you want, because these reversals, it's something that I come back to a lot, because I think it's a feature of markets that is really not appreciated. But reversals like this, i.e. the US 10-year going from its low, which was probably about
50 basis points,
something like that, right, up to over 3% this year. It doesn't just kind of flip up to 3% in overnight. You know, it takes lots of information and lots of movement and lots of kind of change of direction of the economy and policy for that change to happen. So it takes some time. So what trend does quite nicely is it says, look, this is a challenge for you as a bond investor. Your challenge is not it going from 50 and jumping to 70 or whatever the short term move is likely to be. It's what's my tail when it goes to 3 or 4 or, you know, or potentially higher. Have you got a plan for what you should do if that happens? And trend kind of encapsulates that plan for you to a degree, that it says, you know, in that environment, which might may be challenging for a static portfolio, it's actually pretty good for a dynamic trend type portfolio, right? It needs prices to move, and hence in that environment tends to do quite well.
Yeah, and I think in that sense, it shows up as a risk mitigator. And then I would flip to the other side on the diversifier bit, right? So looking at the kind of shape of how commodities have gone this year, energy and metals, it's interesting that it's diversifying. And I'd be curious to hear your thoughts about the diversification properties of what energy has done for inflation, and then how metals looks kind of in terms of positioning over the year, because it's sort of done a bit different than energies, right? It hasn't been supported by the war per se.
Yeah, metals has been different actually, you know, post the invasion, and actually metal prices have suffered quite significantly in the last few months, which is more of a China demand story and less of a supply story. Clearly for energy prices globally, that news event coupled with others are a supply challenge, and that's going to cause a shock upwards to prices, as has happened. And therefore, the point I suppose that you're making is it's a bit more nuanced than saying commodities is a good inflation hedge, right? And in that period post-war, actually, you had incredibly high surprises to inflation. So upward inflation, surprises to inflation, yet falling metal prices, which goes to show that it's a bit more nuanced than just saying commodities is a good inflation hedge. And we've had several of them. I mean, Bitcoin was supposed to be a good inflation hedge, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Until it was absolutely terrible.
I've heard some people say, you know, it's been a great year for trend. You know, when should I take profits? You know, obviously it's up a lot. What would your thoughts be around that?
It's one of those constant, like, psychodrama, I suppose, psychological challenges that people have about timing investments and timing markets. In my experience, it's an incredibly difficult thing to do. And in fact, the waiting for the price to sell off before you buy is counter trend, right? It's the opposite to trend. So on average, if trend tends to work, then that tends not to work. I think the best approach, the approach I would always recommend, is think about your best long-term portfolio and try to get into that as quickly as you can. That's what you should be doing. And the timing bit is very noisy and very difficult.
And it probably ignores the fact that trend is dynamic. If you said you came in March, trend is in inflation. And if I look at trend strategies now, they seem to be mixed, right? There's some positions that look inflationary, some positions look deflationary. So I think there's a misconception about
them. Yeah, that's right. So you're not buying a portfolio, right? If you're buying trend, you're
like
not
value.
Yeah, exactly. You're not buying short bonds and long oil and short metals, right? That might happen to be the case right now, but in next week, that might be very different. So you're buying a dynamic strategy.
Yeah, I guess maybe the argument is it's a bit of an all-weather strategy in quiet times, but something that does pretty well in volatile times. But I guess how much of that, you know, is within your control, right? Like, you know, you can't predict markets. You say so all the time. You've said it a million times. So, you know, what's within your control and how does that make trend fit in my portfolio better? Do I need it to be volatile or?
As you rightly said, none of us know what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone next week or in a year's time or 5 years time. So all we're doing are maximizing our chances of success. And that's the same within a trend following portfolio. We're trying to maximize our chances of success and minimize our chances of things going badly wrong. And all of the way that we would do that is to think about improving all the content that we have, trading as efficiently as possible, being as diversified as possible, and controlling tail risk. You know, those are the ingredients of putting together a great portfolio. And then, you know, the portfolio should be robust to whatever happens to be coming down the road. And that's all we can do.
Yeah, I think that's a great spot for us to finish. It does remind me a little bit of a comment you once made that, you know, one good year is a result of 5 years of hard work. It fits into that. And it's clearly been that kind of year. Well, thanks for joining us, Russell. It's been a nice intro chat to Trent.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Peter.